This is HPR episode 2111 entitled HPR Community News for August 2016 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 92 minutes long. The summary is, Dave and Ken discuss the last month, why we need shows, and the correct way to hang toilet paper.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to HPR Community News for August 2016. HPR is a community podcast network, or what was that you said in your thingy? Crowdsourced podcasts. I like that a lot. Joining me tonight is Dave Morris. Hi Dave.
Hello everybody, hi there.
Can you welcome the new host please, Dave?
Yes, indeed. Just hold on a second. Failing to switch tabs appropriately. Oh, yes. We have one new host, and it is Matt King USA this month.
Indeed it is. So, HPR Community News is your chance to have a look at the... We do a quick review of all the shows that have been posted in the last month. Any comments there have been on the... mailing list, and we talk about the comments left on the previous shows. That's pretty much it. Anything else that is new and exciting, we'll bring up as well. How have you been since last month, Dave?
Oh, busy as always. But yeah, doing things for Hacker Public Radio on and off as well. You know, it's a few things happen.
It's important. It's important, especially producing shows, folks. Because we had a bit of a scare this month again. The upload, we have a feast and famine thing going on here at HPR. And over the last month, we've had a few times where we've needed to ask people to help out. Now, that usually happens over the summer in the Northern Hemisphere. But I would really love it if people would contribute shows, especially if you haven't ever contributed a show. Please do so. It's crowdsourced. So imagine you're the only person at a lug that hasn't contributed. Wouldn't you feel silly if you didn't submit a show? What do you reckon, Dave?
I think that's absolutely right. Couldn't argue with it.
Excellent. So, and if you haven't contributed in 2016, now would be an ideal time to do it. Winter closing in, or if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, hot days forcing you to stay in your nice air-conditioned rooms where you can record podcasts. So anybody can record a show, and it's really easy to do. Just go to the Give Shows section on the website, and all the information you could possibly ever want is right there for you. So one of the things about HPR is we produce quite a lot of shows. And I was thinking, Dave, of seeing as this show is open to all the community at any time to contribute and to join. It usually happens to be myself, yourself, or John or Kevin. But it's open to pretty much anyone who wishes to record. Then I would suggest that if you... wanted to subscribe to just a short summary feed, that this would be the that you didn't want to, or you're being overwhelmed by the number of shows coming into the queue, that you could subscribe to the HPR Community News feed and then use that as your source of what to download, what might be of interest to you. What do you think about that?
Well, that's not a bad idea, actually. Not a bad idea. And the show notes that we produce for this show, you could use as a sort of launching point to go and listen to them on the website. You know, if that looks interesting, or I've heard what they said about it, I'll click on that one and listen. I'm not so sure about doing it in a feed, but
Well, all our series, Dave, come by default with a feed.
Indeed, they do.
So it will be... I think I might suggest that on the mailing list to update the feed page talking about the community news as a jump-off point to what we do here on HPR. And hopefully then people will go and subscribe to the main feed. Because the reason I bring this up is looking at the downloads, we get... probably about 50% of the downloads are drive-by downloads, or you know, people watching the feed and then downloading the shows after the fact or playing them directly on the website.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. I'd sort of assume most people just connected a podcatcher to it and did the thing that we do.
Do I hear a cow in your living room, Dave?
That's my daughter. Who knows I'm recording and has gone to another room because she's suffering from hay fever. But unfortunately, Clara, you're very loud.
No, that's fine. I should call the bus.
She's a good girl.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, we did. Well, the whole HPR audience heard that, Clara, yeah.
Don't worry about it, Clara. We've already heard you on HPR, so we're... we're glad to hear more about you.
She's back off to university tomorrow, so we're driving up to St. Andrews to take her back. So his term starts next week, so all good stuff. So good hopefully stuff. No more interruptions.
No worries, I sent mine off to bed, so there you go. Anyway, let's dive into this. HPR Community News was episode 2686. Sorry, I'm reading in Dutch back to front. And we had one comment on that episode, and that was Tony Hughes, what's in my bag? Hi, guys. Just to comment on your comment on my show 2065, the laptop I talk about were all bought at the local computer option that I've been going to for about 9 years, and where most of my PC tech comes from. So not donated, but bought at a very reasonable cost. The Lenovo X61 cost me £35 each and made brilliant little netbooks. And if they ever get broken, you can move on and have not lost a fortune. That is very good to know. I have no idea what a computer auction is, but I'm presuming it's a computer auction. Do you know what they are?
I don't know. I've never encountered one, but I assume that just like you can go to a car auction and bid on a car, I guess must be similar things that do this for computers. But I don't think they have any around this part of the world, but Tony's lucky to be somewhere where they do.
I've never heard of them here either. In fact, I was down at the local recycling center during the week, and I saw a lovely IBM ThinkPad in the computer waste recycling thing. And I thought to myself, you know, I'll have that. So I walked out and the guy goes, no, you can't have that because it's a computer. I says, oh, why not? Because it's, you know, you're not allowed. I said, well, you know, I can wipe the hard disk and I can take the hard disk out. And he goes, no. I said, but you do realize this is like a very sought after laptop. You could at least give it to the recycling center. And he goes, no, this is what we do with laptops. Took it, smashed it against the side of the container and threw it in the back. I was lost for words.
that's awful. That's
absolutely grim. Lost for words.
It's probably just what his job description says, so that's what he does. It's sad, very sad.
I remember that there was a whole go of, in a company I used to work for, there was a whole go of SunSpark servers being decommissioned. You know, they were top of the line at the time and they were only 2 years old, but there was a platform switch on the cards. So they sold all the hard disks, yeah? But then somebody in finance said, no, we have to destroy the computers because we don't want any sensitive data being leaked. And even though we sent them my manager, his manager, and the VP of the entire technical division tried to explain to them that that they, like, the data wasn't stored on the computers that were stored on the chips. Nope, it still had to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The place I worked for had a very easygoing attitude to this, really. They did clear the disks, but many of the machines just got sort of given away for a lot of the time. You know, when a lab was being emptied of student PCs, then they were just handed out to whoever wanted them. People would come along and grab them. I've got several still in my house here.
Yeah, that was exactly what happened in this. This division had got taken over by another company, officially sucked into the parent company. And it was the parent company's rules that started getting applied. So a lot of cheesed off engineers who were used to getting top of the line servers, you know, only 2 years old and whatever.
Yeah. Wow.
Stretch. Anyway, speaking of Tony, the following day we had Tony doing magazines I read, Vegetarian Times, Feel Good Food, Starbucks magazine, and SFX magazine. None of these I knew about.
No, me neither. Tony's got an interesting collection of magazines that he's reading there. Yeah, worth following up, I think. Well, for myself, anyway.
And, you know, we heard Tony say that he has no suggestions of shows to do.
Really?
Yeah. Tony, can you... I was listing them off the other day, all the shows that I could do. First of all, how he had a career move right in the middle of his life. I'd love to hear about that. Technology that he used. Oh, yes, I just had a list, but I can't possibly think of it now.
But this, we know that Tony, I know anyway, that Tony's a keen photographer. And
right there.
He mentions it in his magazine list. I'd love to hear more about what he does and you know, the kit he has and that type of thing. There would be a lot of photography interest, I would imagine, on HBR.
Absolutely. You know? The basics. And I don't even get the fundamentals of photography, the whole technical, you know, the ISO things, all that stuff that people talk about. I would love to hear more about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. An introduction to photography, especially today, where it's got a lot more complicated than it used to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating.
And what your workflow is, how do you go about, you know, and do a outdoor one. Just clap a Sansa clip to your head and off you go, describing stuff as you go.
Yes, there's enough potential shows there to last for untold years, I would have thought.
And all of
there you go, Tony.
All of which will trigger even more from our part.
Yes, indeed.
Bless me, Dave, for I have sinned. I have mentioned that we don't have any ideas for shows. Anyways, moving on. The next day, how my wife's grandma got me into Linux. The Nightwise, how he got into Linux post. Very nice episode, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite an interesting tale of what happened, which I won't mention, because you should really listen to it to get the full benefit. But it was really quite a personal and interesting story, I thought.
Again, I've said it before and I'll say it again, always these journeys are interesting, where people, how different people come to come to Linux, basically. Tony commented, HBR 2066, hi Nightwise, really love the show. Your experiences with Linux goes a bit further back than mine. I only took the plunge when Ubuntu came on the scene. I started to use it to freecycle old kit here in the UK. I was so impressed with the reaction of these receiving the freely given PCs that I started to use Linux on my own box and have been using Linux since 2009. First with Ubuntu and then Mint. I just upgraded to Mint 18, and so far it looks quite stable.
And Steve says, great story and well told.
Nightwise replies, hey Steve, very happy to hear you found my show entertaining. I hope you have a lot of fun using Linux. I think even more fun if you have the hardware that other people have discarded. It gives you great cred.
And other Steve commented, wish I could grasp this stuff. I hated computers and computing growing up. Didn't understand the importance of oncoming onslaught of the computer age. Presently 10 to 15 years hunting and pecking, tried to learn, but also have low IQ, so I'm pretty much locked out of any hope of ever learning on my own. Anywho, that's my problem. Listening as I'm typing, and the girlfriend and prof dad story is very cool. Thank you.
Now, the other Steve, I'll be having none of that. You met it to HBR, and we will make sure that we get you up to speed as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
So the next day was yourself, Dave, solving my blink stick Python problem.
No. Who? That wasn't me. That was Mr. X.
Solving a yes, Python problem. Of course. Another Scottish person, but a real Scot this time.
We all sound the same, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. All you Scottish people sound the same. Yes, no, it was Mr. X who had listened to your show about the blink stick.
He gave me some compliments, which I'm very very happy to receive. Thank you very much.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm thinking of getting a blink stick, and also Mr. X's soldering episode, which I re-listened to today, and now that I had space for a soldering station here in the back room, which we're now calling the lab. 3 Raspberry Pis set up on a desk with a soldering station in between, a oscilloscope and a function generator on one side. What more do you want?
Ooh, that sounds nice. Oh, yes. You must do a show about that, Ken.
Actually, I may have to, because we're running very low, folks. But I will do. Anyway, back to solving the blink stick problem. It was a Python 3 issue, was it?
Yes, that's right.
It was Python 3 issue.
Mix up between Python versions that caused them its problems.
Yeah. And you replied, Dave?
I commented saying, "Hi, Mr. X. An interesting show. Good to know you're having fun with the blink stick. I'm looking forward to hearing about your Python project in due course." So he was talking about what he was doing with Python to drive the blink stick. So I'm sure that will be interesting.
Yeah, I think it is kind of cool. A Docker dialogue. Do you want to do this one, Dave?
Sorry. Yes. Docker dialogue was Taj with Lyle, who's X1101, talking about Docker, where Lyle has the expertise on Docker. And Taj was coming along as the sort of acolyte to hear the wisdom, which I thought was very interesting. Actually, it's good to hear somebody who works with such technology on a regular basis talking about their experiences and explaining it.
Yeah, very much. Docker is very hot at the moment.
I didn't quite absorb. I may be being stupid, but I didn't quite get why I would want to use it yet. But that's presumably because I'm just me, and I need to be looking at it maybe more with a sort of administrative, multi-service type of viewpoint.
Do you ever use ChangeRoot before?
Say what?
Do you ever use BSD jails or
ChangeRoot
or stuff like that?
Well, I have used ChangeRoot on occasion. Yeah.
Docker is similar to that. It's funny, actually, this whole Docker thing, because I was using Virtuoso way back in the day. And at the time, it was criticized. We as a company were being criticized for using this containerization when, Xen was the way to go at the time. And now things turn around and everything's a Docker. It's amazing how many solutions now you're hearing are being Dockerized, and it's the solution to everything is Docker.
Yeah. Before I finished working, my team was particularly involved in using VMware Everywhere. So we wanted to. We had lots of servers with VMs. Hopping around between them and being able to go to backup servers other side of the campus and all this sort of stuff, and it built tremendous amount of resilience into what we had. It's not clear to me how Docker would step into that sort of scenario, but that's probably just due to ignorance on my part.
Well, it's more from the fact you have you standardize the components so that you can run a minimalistic operating system. which is supplied by the kernel on the main machine, and it's kind of plug and play. You can just run the minimalistic machine on there and then migrate it to somewhere else. And it's more part of the concept of microservices, where you're spinning up multiple of them at the same time. It's how fast you can create them and throw them away and create them and throw them away. But anyway, more shows on Docker would be... this could definitely be a series as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to know more personally, yeah.
Okay, the next day we had everyday
Linux. Hold on.
Sorry,
there were two comments.
Yeah.
There were a couple of comments on this one, and the first one was from B. Yeezy, who said, "More interviews. I really enjoyed this show. Not only did it make Docker seem more approachable to me, but I liked hearing the different perspectives of beginner and experienced Docker users. I also enjoyed the interview format and want to hear more of them. I may have to try and make one myself."
Good idea. Taj replied, "Thanks, Groovy. Thanks. Don't worry, there are going to be more like this one in the future for sure." Is that somebody owing me a show, Dave?
I think lots of people owe you a show, actually. But yes, definitely.
Apparently, they only owe me a show if they say they're going to do a show, Dave. So,
okay.
Now, the next day, Be Easy, who had just replied there. "Everyday Linux tools for data processing. Give some examples of common tools for data processing." Detox. Oh my God, that is awesome. That is the most awesome tool. Oh my God, I have changed so many scripts. I have tidied up so many disks. That is absolutely going on every server I ever build in my life.
So you like it then, eh, Ken?
Oh man, it is brilliant. Oh man. You have it's no clever. Idea yeah, the crud great. That fixes.
I have to admit that I have, since I've been using Unix and fell down the hole of, you know, a file name is a thing that the parser in your shell can't necessarily deal with. So if you say, you know, do this thing and here are the arguments, and the first one is that file, and the file's got weird stuff in it, in its name.
Like a space,
And like a space. And of course, space being the delimiter, et cetera, all falls to pieces. So, you know, I just taught myself to always quote stuff in those sort of contexts.
Yes, I do as well. All my scripts, for the most part, well, for the last few years, I've been doing that because I've fallen down that well so many times. But still, it is still a pain in the ass.
It's true. I have a Vim plugin whose name I can't remember, but it calls various syntax checkers on whatever I'm currently editing. And there's one for Bash, and it's called Shell Check. And it nags you like hell every time you save a file where you haven't covered yourself from the dreaded spaces in file names. It says, no, this one won't work, so change it. Quote the thing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
I get files sent to me from people all over wherever, and you know, different OSs and different countries even, and all sorts of weird characters. Like we wasted a day trying to debug an issue where there's a character in one of the Eastern European languages that's got a tiny microscopic dot next to one of the I's, and we were beating ourselves on the head why grep wasn't working. We weren't able to find it in the file. We could see it there. Look, it's right here. And then eventually we opened up a hex editor and did a hex dump on both files. And then, what code is this?
Yes,
good stuff.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Loads of tools there.
Yeah, some lovely things there. I was quite excited with ACK. I thought you might be, yes. Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. Well, it's a good list, though. Excellent list.
Unix, some classics there. Unix to DOS, DOS to Unix, curl, wget. Said, of course, you've done the series on that. PDF to text, I use that an awful lot. So yeah, awesome stuff. Might also want to look into PDF grep, which is actually a nice little tool for grepping inside the PDF files. It's not as powerful as grep itself, but is pretty good. Jonathan Culp, who also agreed, ACK! Exclamation mark. Thanks for this genius tool. Never heard of it before.
And you said, I love Detox, as you already said. detox minus VR, asterisk. Wow, what an excellent tool.
Yes, and Dave Morris, thanks for mentioning ACK. Wow, I've never encountered ACK before. It's amazing. I have written a bunch of scripts to work with Postgres databases. Yes, I know it's like wearing a hair shirt for self-mortification. I found I could do things like ACK-shell-pager equals more PSQL space dot. There's no other easy way to do this that I know of. Thanks very much for pointing this out.
And Ivor said, interesting. I always love Vim tips, so I got pulled in looking at the buffer search. Then I noticed the other tools mentioned. Most of them I know about and use all that are relevant to me very frequently. So now I'm going to subscribe.
Hi, Ivor. Welcome to the team. Owe me a show. Owe me a show. But they don't owe me a show unless they say they're going to do a show. But excellent, excellent, excellent tools. Well done. My new love, Swift 110. Has a new laptop.
Yes, I was just trying to remember what it was. Yes, I've forgotten what it was. He got, seemed to have got quite a bargain anyway.
Yeah, exactly. A T420, and he went to lots of upgrades and stuff, new RAM and stuff. So excellent. Nice when you know something works out.
Yeah, it seemed to get a really good deal as well. Yeah. It sounded excellent.
Unlike my roof, Dave.
Oh dear, yes. Sad tale.
Anyway, happy tale. GNU Health. This is one of yours. Is this the same Tom I met very briefly at FOSTEM that time?
Indeed so, yes.
It's a pity I didn't have more time to be social. That would have been nice.
He keeps telling me he's going to do a show at some point, but on his own, but he's a busy guy, so I don't forgive him, but he's got lots of fascinating things he could tell us about if I can ever get him to do it.
Yeah, keep shoving the microphone in front of him. Brilliant. Blah, 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 blah. Show notes, as always, Dave. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. That was partly the contributions from Tom and Ewan went into that.
I should also mention Ewan did a nice job there on that. Wow, it looks pretty sexy, that whole Raspberry Pi setup.
Yeah. It's really quite good. It's not a cluster as such. It's just a pile of machines in close proximity.
Still, but yes.
Tower of Pi. Still a brilliant setup. So hopefully I'll get an update from him about his project now next year.
Wow, it is.
Maybe so cool. We can do a follow through or something like that. I don't know.
Somebody should post this onto... onto what do you call it, NetHack or something?
Yeah.
Give me 1 second. Hackaday. Somebody should post that onto Hackaday.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. I think Ewan was hoping he could use the show as part of his CV because he's
absolutely
now finished his degree and gone off looking for a job. So
absolutely. Yeah,
good luck to you.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Ewan, good luck.
Yeah.
There was one comment, and it was from Clinton Roy, who said, very interesting and important. Thanks for the interview. And he's right. It is important stuff.
It is. It is indeed. I used to work in a medical device company, and it was very fulfilling, even though my part was kind of minimalistic.
Yeah, GNU Health has a tremendous amount of potential for improving, the way that the medical setups are run all over the world. If it can be accepted. So let's hope that happens.
Cool stuff. The following day, helping to save the world, Jonathan Culp with an accessibility series on custom keystrokes for desktop navigation on GNOME. Oh, hi, Leafy. Bring me a cup of tea.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes.
Lucky you.
Indeed, I am in more ways than one. I can tell you that for nothing.
I had to make my own tea. Yeah.
You poor, poor thing. Get your daughter in.
She's packing for university tomorrow.
Yeah.
Always an excuse.
What? Did you start wrapping her sandwiches in map? In the Atlas? Anyway, custom keystrokes. This is always interesting. Every time I see this WMCTRL thing, I keep thinking I can do stuff with that.
Yeah, but, you're right. I feel the same thing. But
yeah, but it's Do you know the way it is, actually, Dave, at the minute? Our house is such a mess. We've spent the last week going from top to bottom because there's this brilliant open scene in Malcolm in the Middle, one of them, where he comes in and he flicks the light switch. I've told you about this before, and the bulb doesn't go on, and then he goes to get a bulb, and the drawer falls off and continues on. And then he ends up, you know, under the car, and the wife comes to tell him, hey, the light bulb's gone in the kitchen, and he replies, what do you think I'm fixing? That's the way my house has been. Every job that I've had to do, I can't do it because there's something else in the way, and I can't do that because the garage is, or the shed is full, and the shed is full, I need to empty the shed. So I spent the whole week, myself and my wife spent the whole week just clearing the house down so that we've only, everything's in the front room, and now the old back room is sorted. So hopefully, long story short, I might be able to get to some of this stuff in the fullness of time.
Yes, yes. I know this is always a painful process. You end up living in a corner of your house in order to improve another part of it.
Exactly.
It's never fun. Yeah.
So you replied. Do you want to read your own? Or?
Yes, yeah. I commented.
You playing the part of Dave Morris. It's Dave Morris.
It's hard. It's a hard job, but I'll try. Using grep in a script, I said. One thing
more
I've learned
Scottish, while... More Scottish accent.
Or using grep in a script, Jimmy. One thing I've learned while writing bash scripts. Did that convince you, though?
I think 1950s Hollywood movie of Scotland, air quotes. Right up there with, sure, be gara.
You have to do these things right, you know?
Anyway,
I said, one thing I've learned while writing bash scripts, for the hell of it sometimes, is that grep minus Q is useful for direct use in if expressions. So you could do if WMCTRL minus L, pipe to grep minus Q, LibreOffice, semicolon, then, I won't read the rest of it out, but you could replace quite a lot of what John was doing there by just the one if. It can reduce script complexity a fair bit.
John Culp replies, good tip. Very nice tip. It could save us having to redirect stuff to DevNull, wouldn't it? To which you replied.
Grep minus Q, yes. Grep minus Q simply returns a zero, which means true. Result if a match is found and writes nothing on standard output. I didn't know about this until relatively recently. The original Unix grep I encountered didn't have this, and you'd have to do the things the way you did in your script. GNU grep was enhanced with many features, which I think was a good thing personally. Others prefer the old clean way.
I like that grep-q thing because I've ended up doing the piping dash C piping to word count dash L when I want to do this exact thing, because you can't know if grep returned a value or not. So what most of my scripts do, which involves using grep, I grep dash C, and if it's got no entries, it'll be zero. So I pipe to word count dash L, and then if that escaped thing equals zero, then, which is a very roundabout way of doing it, I will be replacing it with this tip. So nice tip, Dave.
Oh, thanks. Yep. So yes, it's all about sharing things you find, isn't it?
It is indeed. And sharing things that you've attended, SSL certificates, how they work. Never get tired of hearing this man speak. I wish I had a lug that I could go to. It would be cool. But there you go.
Yeah, yeah. It's I have one. There's one in Edinburgh I've never been to. I've commented on the mailing list on occasion. But
I've told you before. All you need to do is say, guys, I don't have a beard because I've got this skin condition.
I'm probably old enough that they don't care otherwise.
Anyway, I replied, it's not allowed in the EU. Excellent episode. As always, I'm not a lawyer, but in the EU, at least, it's not permissible to intercept all communications via local SSL serve, even if there is a policy in place about non-personal use of computers. Google Chrome has also implemented checks that will alert if the site of known certs, for example, google.com, turns out to be not using the ones for google.com. And he mentions that in part two.
Yes. I hadn't heard of the Google thing, the Chrome thing. I mean, it's just detecting man in the middle stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's baked into the browser itself, and it will verify with Google certain well-known websites like Gmail and Microsoft and places like that. That's how a lot of those have been found, actually, a lot of those exploits.
Yeah, but
Kevin mentions
that
in the next episode.
Kevin replies to you saying, different in the EU. Well, I'm not a lawyer either, but it looks like EU and US are different in this regard. I can say that in US, the courts have ruled that it's legal since the company owns the computers.
Yep, but wouldn't be for if you brought your own personal phone or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Useful bash functions, part two. This time, further development of bash functions that may be of use in your script. See how I'm cheering up, Dave? This is your bash scripting other useful functions. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
to the yes no function. Did you get a slagging over this?
Somebody said to me, oh, that's not very good, because it if you gave it a default, it offered it to you on the command line,
so that
you had to then delete it before you could type the other thing that you wanted to type. And somebody pointed out that was horrible. And I think it might have been somebody quite close by now.
It wasn't me.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't me.
Well, maybe it was just me telling myself that I didn't like it. But I thought I'd just rework it so I could get a show out of that, I thought.
I had a question. Did I post it on the comment?
You did.
I had the question. Here's me with the questions. Any particular significance of the percent %s? I did not know this about the function name array, nor did I know about the bash line number array, nor about the default 2 power thing. Why do you do this? Prompt v prompt dollar prompt yn and not simply prompt yn. Within the comments.
Right.
Answer me, Dave.
it's quite a long answer. So I said the percent %s is to be used in the prompt, and then gave an example. Do you want to continue percent %s?
Yes, but could it be percent cow, for instance, or percent banana?
Because it's a substitution point for printf, and so it's saying here, I want to put the thing that you compute for me, the brackets yes, no, with the capitalization appropriate to my default. I want it here. Mm-hmm. So you could not have it at all if you wished.
It's like the percent %d when you're doing the percent %f.
Yes.
Okay.
Percent %s
I get it now.
Is put a string here. So substitute a string of arbitrary length, as I said in the reply. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. And the use of printf to write the prompt string allows the format to be defined when you call the function, and that's all that stuff about print minus v prompt. The minus v prompt saves the result in a variable called prompt, and it rewrites the existing variable prompt, and the dollar prompt variable was the thing with the percent in it, so it just rewrites it without the percent %s, but with the yn business in it. Yeah,
I would probably have done command substitution in there.
Yeah, but it needs the printf in order to do the substitution, because
we're
substituting a string into a string. Yeah, you could have done it through putting the string you're going to substitute in into a variable, and then dropping that into the string. Yeah, you could do that, but I thought this was more elegant.
No, printf. Printf I've avoided for some strange reason. Don't know why. It felt too C to me.
Oh, yeah, well, that's why.
It's also used in Perl as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, all over the place. It's, and in Ork and all manner of things.
Do you know what, Dave? Somebody should do a show about printf.
yeah, well, that's probably a good idea. Yes.
This community news.
Speak to that somebody.
Yeah, exactly. This community news thing just ends up being how many shows I can get you signed up for, and how many shows you can get me signed up to do. Oh,
yes.
Lordy.
There's a certain balance in that, I suppose, isn't there? Anyway, so I think it might be best if we point people to read this comment if they're interested enough, rather than me going through to the bitter end.
Although I do think there is printf is oft not understood command, at least by myself. So would be no harm to have that as a show.
Yeah. Well, it will come up under the orc heading. I can guarantee that. But it's of relevance in that context, and it's also come up in Bash as well, as we've just seen. So there you go.
Cool. New toys, my story for my PC hardware journey in the last 20 years. And it is amazing. It is absolutely amazing how much we've come on. Intel 286s, I remember them very well. I remember trying to get them to work as in college. And then trying to get IBM PCs to work in work. And right now we have like the power of Raspberry Pis. Just, it's amazing what those Raspberry Pi 3s can get up to.
Yeah, true. Things have moved in very interesting directions.
Tony left a comment on his own to say that he made a mistake. The price of the new tower during the show mixing it up with the Dell laptop. I also bought the same option. The total price he paid was £184.80, which given then go on eBay for 260 plus, not including delivery. I thought it was a bargain. I would agree with him.
Tony's definitely the man for the bargain at the auctions. He's somebody to follow in that regard.
I would. There's the show, Tony. Tony, put on a Sansa clip on your head and your baseball cap and go round to the auctions. Give us a atmospheric show. We still need a good name for those type of shows. Community, anyone think of a good name for those type of shows that would encompass swimming in France, inner walks down rainy lanes, call-in shows from psychiatric wards, and that sort of thing. That would be nice.
Anyway, Frank? Frank, shall on. I do?
Yeah, please.
Frank's a nice short comment. Frank says, I remember slide rules, .. Yes, because Tony mentions that there were slide rules around when he was in college, I think it was.
When I did engineering, we were the first year that didn't have to use slide rules. And yes. I always felt cheated about that. So if Frank would love, Frank or anybody else, would like to do a slide rule show, that would be awesome. I'd really like to know how those work. And can recommend actually, where we can get them and whatever.
They'd be hard to get these days, won't they? Yeah.
Oh, Dave, I bet you. I guarantee you somebody is producing slide rules right now. Probably cheap, crappy plastic ones. But
yeah, maybe so. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
That would be something for your Reboot Civilization Reboot Civilization box, you know?
Yeah. I did offer to do a slide rule show way back when I mentioned them on one of my shows.
Did.
And I
you
never
do
did.
Me a show, Dave.
It's still on my list and I keep looking at it thinking, oh, not sure I want to do this.
Well, if there's anybody else that wants to beat Dave to the course, please do so.
yeah. Well, I did have to use it and did use them a fair bit. And I was a schoolboy, but I never really was very good. Got over them all that well. I didn't have a very good one. That's what it was. It was the rule. It wasn't me. It was a slide rule.
Of course,
definitely. If I got a more expensive one, it would have been much better.
Yes. I know the feeling. Following day, minimalistic music site Matt King discusses the availability of an open source multimedia focused website. Very, very simple. sourceforge.net/p/minimal-music-site. That's it. Very responsive website for uploading content, originally designed primarily for musicians needing an easy interface to share content. Upload files in the admin page, automatically saves files in a directory and lists the contents by date. So it'll be interesting to see how secure that is, but I have often needed to do such a thing. And also on sites that wasn't that important, how, you know, they were internal, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. I wasn't quite sure what to expect when I saw the the title.
Yeah, exactly.
It was an interesting first show, I thought.
Yeah. The Muzak show was the next. Lyle and Taj talk about making music on Linux. X1001 submitted a show. Tools, LMMS, Audur, Q-Tractor, Fluid Synth, Hydrogen, loop, Guitar, Rax, and Rack-a-Rack, all of which can be shows in themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope that Lyle tells us about progress as he goes into trying to make music with Linux tools like this.
These are... Yeah, sorry, I'm cutting you off, Colin.
No, he's trying to learn the ways of making computer-based music using only Linux, which is an interesting approach. I think that's what he wants to do anyway. So, you know, it's going to be quite an interesting thing to listen into. And Taj being a musician, as a, you know, if they do more of these interviewee type chat shows, that would be very interesting to follow, I think.
Absolutely. And also, don't be afraid of the I Fail shows. I was planning on doing some this week because I've been trying to get a satellite USB thing working on one hand and a USB digital audio converter thing working. And I've tried, you know, did you ever do a project where you tried stuff and then you tried more stuff and then you hit another roadblock and another roadblock and another roadblock and eventually you get to the final goal and there is, you know, you get the error message and then you paste the error message in and it's on the website. Oh, that hardware is not supported and will never work and blah, blah, blah. Go buy something else. And you go, if I'd only known that, I would have saved myself 3 weeks of my life. Is that an interesting show or not? That is.
Oh, I think it's interesting. Yes. Yes, but absolutely.
What does it prove? Because, you know, the thought process of going through it,
it shows that people do find themselves in nasty holes like this and can take a long time to find out they are in a hole, and maybe the person listening will avoid that hole in the future. It's certainly one possibility. Maybe push people to doing better analysis in the first instance, do you think?
Yeah, don't buy cheap hardware. Actually, that probably should be the end of it, you know, as a series. It would be a good series. You know, failed. You started a project and it failed, and how you approached, you know, taking from another angle might be no harm. I mean, I learned lots of stuff in the process, but okay, I'll think about it.
It's like science, isn't it? There's all this talk about a lot of journals won't take the failures of scientific experiments and stuff. People want to write up, I did this and it didn't work. And they say, oh, no, we don't want that. We only want the successes. So you never, the lesson is not necessarily learned by the next generation of people trying to do the same thing. You know, it's part of that model.
Yeah. I just saw a YouTube video on, you know, breaking down how dangerous that is, that they is now. A move to try and get studies funded beforehand and have them guaranteed to be published regardless of the results.
Yeah, well, that's a great thing. That's a great thing.
Yeah. Okay, maybe we should try that. That would definitely be a fail. Series like re-enable copy and paste in the browsers, how to bypass the roadblocks implemented by JavaScript. Oh, yes. What a waste of time that is.
It was an interesting revelation. I'd been caught out by this and been intensely frustrated that I couldn't use my KeyPassX to paste stuff in and so on. I had tried to poke around with the, you know, drop down into developer thingy on the web browser and try and see what I could turn off. Succeeded probably once or twice. I can't remember now.
Me too.
And it was quite satisfying saying, well, stuff you, whoever created this stupid thing, and because I got around it. But having plugins to do it is far, far better. So
yeah, but it's
really good.
Again, as I say, it's a complete waste of time. The people who are anyway technically competent can get around it, and the other people you just frustrate.
It's part of that mindset that is just following a rule because somebody wrote it down and you dare not argue with them because it might cost you your job or some nonsense like that. I used to fight the stupid thing about 90-day password changes at work, and I succeeded for many years to stop that. But as when I left, the auditors who stipulate these things, I think, managed to institute it across the bat, and disclaimers in emails. A student sending a message to his supervisor saying, I'm a bit stuck, and it has a disclaimer at the bottom of it. What an incredibly stupid thing. Bloody auditors again.
And this, please don't print this email, attaching a GIF of a tree with a whatever. And you just think... And then there's a to and fro email, and all of a sudden 25 megabytes of disk space has been used up by this guy. And the disk space is taking up space and energy and the amount of packets that this thing needs to be sent around. You're just going, you're killing trees, mate. Delete your tree.
Yeah. Bureaucracy. It's what
people
it is.
Using large fonts, Dave.
Oh, yes. We'll get this world put right soon, don't you worry.
We will. How are you on the tab versus space thing? What? Apparently it's the new Vim versus Emacs, whether you use tab or spaces in text files.
Oh, right. I've got expand tab switched on in my Vim. So if I type a tab, it turns into spaces. And when you load a file, it says, oh, there's tabs in there. I'll just change them to spaces. Unless you say, I want them kept, like you need to in make files and stuff.
So
it just makes life so much easier, I find.
Okay. Your views on that, if anyone wants to record a show on why one way or the other would be done. I'm very tempted to do a show on toilet paper, the correct way to hang it up as well. Might just write that here on the board.
Fold the ends properly, you know, into interesting little airplanes and stuff like that. That's what you should be doing.
Yes. Where the rolls round to the front where you can easily grab it, or you can put it at the back where all the gunky stuff can gather on the wall. Guess which one I will be recommending.
I can't do it.
Anyways, what's on my pug catcher? Tony Hughes, who apparently can't think of anything to submit. HBR, of course, going Linux, Linux Voice, Linux Action Show, Linux Unplugged, Mintcast, Sunday Morning Linux Review, the Pi Podcast, which unfortunately has just stopped, Ubuntu Podcast, BBC Kitchen Cabinet, Infamonger Cave, The Life Science, Moral Maze, and In Our Time. Good shows. Did not get a chance to put them into an OPML file yet. It's on the list, though, Dave.
Yeah. That should be... I've got a Perl script that can do that, I think, somewhere.
Are you taking over? Feel free.
What have I said?
Don't let me, a busy father with a young family, you, retired gentleman... All the little children fleeing the nest, nothing but plenty of time, long winter evenings. No pressure, Dave.
You almost convinced me there, Ken.
Oh, Lordy. Anyway, 2021, Rome had AngularJS, NG Repeat, and browsers that shall not be named. A method for optimizing and rendering items using AngularJS, NG repeat directive. Did this go over my head? Yes, but he was able to explain it very, very well, so much so that I realized this is the essence of HPR. You've got a lovely hack, and it is a very ugly hack, but it's working. And you need somebody to tell about it, somebody who would appreciate it. And yes, this was awesome.
Yes, I agree. And the fact that it went over my head, because I'm not really a web person. I don't get it. Don't really want to get it. But you know, it's got nothing to do with it.
I was still well able to follow this, like the refreshing the pages. He gave enough explanations so that the layperson could follow it. Absolutely awesome. Well done. And why you would use it, and amazing that you can do this sort of stuff. Amazing stuff.
The whole web world has got enormously complicated.
It has. With
JavaScript and all of that good stuff, it's become really amazing. So yeah,
there's also dangers of it, like going back to, you know, I simply can turn off all this JavaScript stuff in my browser, and then boom, it won't work because it's
you just got a blank
code
page
running on my computer. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I go to many sites where I just get a blank page, nothing there. Oh, right, switch JavaScript on. Ah, yes,
there we go. This. And that, was it a NoScript plugin that allows you to select which one, and then you turn on one website, and there are 10 websites. Which are these? Are advertising ones? Let me just try this one. Okay, that didn't work. Image.site. Okay, I'll turn that one on. And then you just go, anyway. It is what it is.
Yeah,
good
yeah.
Show, though. More of that type of thing. The following day was DIY book binding, and I saw on the IRC that Tlatu was going to do a show on book binding, which I strongly suspect will be of a higher caliber than mine. But anyway.
Well, I thought it was an interesting approach, actually. It's it was, I don't know whether I would have taken a jigsaw to it, but I'm not sure what else I would have done. Because my experience with jigsaws is that they're horrible, messy devices that it's hard to cut a straight line with. And
yep, they are.
Because that blade bends like hell, and it's also tends not to be very fine. I suppose you can get finer toothed ones that might do a better job. But still,
yep,
I thought it was an interesting approach, and the fact that you actually managed to get something bound that way, I thought was most intriguing.
I have another one ready to rock here I need to do tomorrow.
It's very much a thing in the maker world to do bookbinding.
Yes.
There's a guy I follow called Jimmy DiResta who does stuff for Make. And there's other things who's done some superb notebook things, you know, where he binds them and then puts them in a leather cover and stuff like this. And it's a fascinating thing to watch. My daughter Clara and I did a... She did most of the work, but she made herself a bound book using the sewing technique.
Yeah, it's lovely.
The thing you mentioned the sewing stuff.
Hi, Clara.
Did you hear her?
Clara, why don't you do a show on the book binding thing?
Not good enough.
She's I did a comments. Show on tying a knot in an earbud. Come on, it's got to be better than that.
I have to give her some headphones to get all that. But yes. No, she's done the one. How many shows have you done now, Clara? One, wasn't it? You did one with me. You came back from your Indonesian trip.
What?
We did a...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she'd forgotten. But yes, we'll have to get her into making a recording for Hack Public Radio. Anyway.
Absolutely. Anyways, the following day we had Calf Reverb by Nacho Jordi. I thought he wasn't doing any more of these shows, but it's good to see that he's got still a few more in there. Wasn't aware of what a calf reverb was until the show, basically.
Yeah, I couldn't have told you anything. I know what reverb is, but I don't know what this particular thing was. But yeah, interesting. He obviously knows his way around this stuff. It's quite interesting to get more info about it.
I like the fact that you can pick the size of your room, and very clear the explanation in it, and also seems very clear the controls. If you go to the website, that's linked. Nice.
I haven't followed it through. I just got a cat dumped on me for daring to bring my daughter into the
okay.
So retribution was there. Sorry. Yes. There's the insight into the domestic arrangements here.
Very nice to hear, Dave. Anyways, SSL problems. This is the second part of Ahuka's show where he addressed the Google thing was on. Also, very good links to lots of stuff here in the show notes. And DigiNotar was I actually got offered a job for them. I'm really... really glad I didn't take that job in the end.
Yes.
It would have been my head at the time. Embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah. Oops.
Mr. X, sorry, go on.
Mr. X, you were going to say.
Yeah, my podcast client.
My podcast client.
He is using HPotter. Never heard about that.
Yeah, well, I commented on this, and to the effect that I had used it way back in 2006, I found, around about the time this it came out around about then, at the same time as everybody was using Juice, I think it was, Windows, and I tried it, and I for some reason I stopped using it. It's actually very good. When you look at the details of it, it's maybe it wasn't so good then, but it certainly developed quite a bit over the time. It looks really very clever.
Doesn't seem to be updated anymore though, which is a bit of a problem.
No, I think he's given up on it, perhaps, yeah. Which is a
2010.
Shame.
But then again, maybe it's finished.
Well, indeed. Still seems to work as far as I can see. So,
what's it written in?
Haskell.
Oh, good. That's where the H comes from, yeah.
Yep. It's going to be, unless you're a Haskellite, then you're going to be struggling to look after that, I think. But
yep.
My pal Tom writes Haskell, so I'll get him to do it.
Just after he does all our shows, yeah.
yeah, after the GNU health.
After saving the world medically, then he can record some HBR shows and then take over ownership of that.
Yeah, I think you should do a tutorial on Haskell, actually.
That would be good.
No, he's very keen. Being a computer scientist, he's very keen on the concept of Haskell, which I find very difficult to absorb myself. But anyway, shall I read out my comment? Because I've said most of what it can say. Okay, so I said I'd forgotten HPodder. It's an interesting show. Your description of HPodder made it sound well worth looking at. Then I realized I'd heard the name before. On looking at my home directory, found I'd used it back in 2006. I even found the twiddle/.hpodder directory and the old SQLite database, which interestingly contained lots of TLLTS pointers. Ah. Episodes 200 and whatever. But so obviously I was listening to them those days. And I said, yes, my home door contains all the collected crud of many years of tinkering.
Yeah.
I just up and move it to the new machine, you know?
Yes, I know the feeling.
I have no idea why I stopped using HPodder. I eventually hacked together a system of my own around BashPodder, so maybe that's why. Prior to that, I think I was using Juice on the family Windows system and at some point GPodder. Anyway, it was nice to hear about HPodder again.
Good shows. Again, with the, what's the best to use? I was thinking of writing my own eventually, but I don't know. We will see. Makefiles for Everyday Use was submitted by John Culp, where he talks about makefiles in my LinuPond and HTML projects. I had never considered that you would write a makefile to do this type of automation, but it actually makes an awful lot of sense.
Yes, indeed. Once you get into the concept of using makefiles for that type of thing, there's many, many applications to use it. Though understanding make is quite a challenge, I find, anyway.
Yeah, so I've heard people say over the years. So there were some comments on
John
that.
John said this himself, in fact. John said that his knowledge was sort of put together from looking at other people's makefiles to a large extent, which is, you know, fair enough. Yes, comment. Shall I do the first one? Was from Fweeb, who entitled it .phony. I did a quick info make and scanned through it a bit, he says. The .phony target is a kind of safety net. See, normally targets and makefiles share the name of the exact file being made. However, in the case of something like clean, there's usually no file with that name being produced, just a series of deletions. However, if there is a file named clean in the same directory as your makefile, this can cause some confusion for the make command. So by using .phony clean, you're telling make to disregard a file named clean if it happens to see it. I'm less sure about .suffixes. The section on that in the manual is long and starts with the phrase old-fashioned, so perhaps it's something that's not entirely necessary for your makefile at this point.
Jonathan Culp replies, .real, thanks for the info. It's funny, I guess I could read InfoMan pages myself, but normally I just look at other people's makefiles for examples and never really understand what you're doing. Once it all works, I'm happy. Bit of trial and more error.
I felt the urge to comment and
you
said,
you did.
Copy and paste programming. I don't know. I should stop this. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I said copy and paste programming. We've all been there. I believe the practice is called copy and paste programming nowadays, where you know, copy and paste from other people's stuff. I've certainly written make files by this method. I've tried to learn more about the subject by reading GNU make manual, but it's hard going. I'd say it's certainly a subject for a series of HPR shows.
Ta-da. Well done, well done. See what he did there, folks? See what he did there?
So yes, what we need now is somebody to step up to the plate.
Somebody who knows make files gone. Yeah, I know what that means. Yeah, and that's you. That's you. Changing the oil in my wife's car. John Colt submitted many shows this month, and the reason was we didn't have enough. And why do we need to have shows every day, Dave? Do you know the reason to that?
I think it might be because if we didn't have a show on a day, we wouldn't have a show on that day.
But this is a podcast, Dave. Why would it matter? Because there would be four other shows that week. Why would it matter?
Yes, but the principle of Hacker Public Radio is that there's a show every weekday.
Yes, and but if there wasn't a show, that?
If there wasn't a show on a given weekday, then it would have been cheating.
Exactly. It would be letting down your audience. And if you look at any and all of the how to keep and grow and maintain your audience on even YouTube or NPR local radio stations, cable networks and stuff, they say post regularly and keep to a schedule. That is every single one of them. Post regularly and keep to a schedule. HPR schedule is 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and we haven't deviated from that for many years now. And we have always said as part of me coming on board, the deal was that I will continue to post the shows, help people out until somebody else steps up to the plate to do it, or we run out of shows, at which time we will continue to post shows every single day. We will use up the emergency shows, and once those are gone, then HBR as a project will stop. And that will be that. And that's fine if that happens. And eventually, you know, when the day before entropy occurs, we will be shutting down HBR going, there you go, episode 4 billion, blah, 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 blah. And thank you very much. That was the last HBR show. Hopefully we will do that, but more than likely we'll stop prior to that. But I would like HBR to go out with posting all the shows and then just stopping on the day. So if you want HBR to continue, then you need to submit shows. It's a crowdfunded thing. It's crowdsourced. So send in your podcast. Doesn't have to be rocket science, but it can be. That's all I have to say about that.
I've thought often it would be nice if we had a few shows from people about how they thought about being HBR hosts when they were listening to it. Thought, oh, no, I could never do that. And then they made the plunge and became hosts and found that it wasn't such a big problem after all. And it changed their lives somewhat in feeling that they got beyond a barrier they thought was insurmountable and found that it wasn't. And it'd be nice to hear some personal stories about that type of thing.
It would. It would also be nice to hear from people who thought, I'd like to post a show to HBR, but I never did. And here's why I didn't. Because that would be really useful information for us, Dave, because the key to, you know, this project, keeping this project going, is not, as I've said to you, it's not increasing listenership. It's increasing the number of people who are contributing shows. With that, we will increase listenership by definition of by virtue of the fact that we're getting more people in and they're producing shows. So if you're a HBR contributor and you have submitted shows, you also should be going around asking other people to contribute. I don't even know what the ratio of the number of people I've asked to contribute a show and who have. It's like 1% of the people that I've asked. But in order to get 1%, you at least have to ask 200 people. So how you do that? You go to festivals, you go to places, you hand out the HBR business cards. We really need to get more people submitting shows. It's not that hard.
Yeah. We need to do that leaflet that we had before, perhaps again.
Yeah, and we need to start going back to fests, and we need to leave brochures in public libraries and talk to any hobbyists, leave brochures in the hobby shops and stuff like that. And we need people to make those brochures for us, that sort of thing. Think outside of the box, guys. Anything where people gather together, where, you know, the local forge would be an ideal place to leave some leaflets.
Very good. Yes.
Okay. Anyway, how he changed the oil on his wife's Honda CR-V. Are these falling into a garage series or not?
Sounds like it. Yeah, yeah.
It's getting very close to it, isn't it?
John's garage and get your oil changed.
And that neighbour has been on so often now, I think he deserves his own host number. Should have him submit a show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I enjoy listening to these sorts of things. So
it's lovely. It's like
a view into somebody else's life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Do you know one of the things that always puzzles me listening to sounds of things in John's driveway and whatever,
yeah,
is how many vehicles that go past his house that sounds if they're agricultural, you know? They sound like tractors and, combine harvesters or something like that going past. I just wonder what they are.
There's been a lot of bells recently as well. Did you hear the bells? The bells! The bells!
Oh, yes, there were distant bells, weren't they?
Yeah.
Listening to the bird song.
Nice. I don't know, maybe he just lives in like a phone booth somewhere and is just using sounds from the Internet Archive just to pad out to make us all believe that he lives in this nice rural area. Or freesounds.org, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
I doubt it very much.
Hacking my inner ear, Dave. You going to get us shut down for pushing miracle cures for BPPV. I was just listening to this, thinking that's one more thing now I have to look forward to in my upcoming years. Why, Dave? Why?
Yeah. Like I said in the thing, there was a point where I wanted to go into medicine, and so I'm as well as being a biology geek now and boring everybody to tears with biological crap, I also get to quite interested in medical things and do the same, I'm afraid. So, anyway.
No, it was fascinating. Also, the fact that it never struck me before, and it's obvious that these are channels in your skull that you can't just pop it out as a unit. It is.
Do you know, I never
realized that.
No, neither did I. And it was actually researching this that made me suddenly realize that was the case, because all the while since being at school and being shown, you know, as I suppose everybody is, you're taught about the structure of your inner ear. They always show it as a structure that, a totally enclosed sort of tubular structure that you could hold in your hand. But you'd have to do some chipping and hacking away to get it into that form. You know, I really don't understand. Presumably somebody once took a skull and poured wax into the space to see what shape it was and took it out and stuck it together and whatever and said, there you go, that's the shape. And everybody's gone with that ever since. I really don't know.
Oh, cool. Actually, that's from this month. So we've broken our own rule, Dave. Anyways.
We have. I normally look out for these things. So we'll save the delights of inner ears till next month. Yeah. That's something to look forward to next month.
We had. Oh, thank you very much for updating the comment system. Let's do that. Dave has broken up the comment system so that he has 8 comments from 4 previous shows, and there are 24 comments on 12 of this month's shows. So that's excellent. We've already covered the other comments, so we'll go back and have a look at the comment about Gabriel Evenfire's old engineers and new engineers, which Alpha 32 commented, it was an excellent show. The show was great. Magnet of things that was hilarious. And obviously he had his kids solve a puzzle. And it seems kids always come up with, the comment is, the magnetic thing was hilarious. It seems a kid always come up with those incredibly simple solutions. Very reaffirming and entertaining. Thanks for sharing. Great shows. I agree. Couldn't agree more. Next one.
The next one, sorry, I'm just coordinating myself here.
I can do it. I have it right here.
HBR, no, I've got it. 2066 was the community news for June, and Alpha 32 made the comment, world oat domination. Dave, we should start a pinhead stroke steel cut oat racket. I'll ship them from the US. You sell them in the UK. I'm guessing their rarity in the UK is because you've been importing them from Europe. Pinhead oat industry, an unforeseen casualty of Brexit.
It's
a very nice comment. I like that.
Do you want to read your own comment or will I?
I'll read my own comment, yes. Made in Scotland, I said in reply. Alpha 32, nice idea, but pinhead oatmeal is produced in Scotland by Hamlins of Banff, Aberdeenshire.
Aberdeen.
I see my picture at, and there's a flicker picture I point to. So I took a picture of a tin of pinhead oatmeal for other people to prove that it really existed. And probably others too, no doubt, other than Hamlins.
Wow.
I suspect that not much goes south of the border of this wonderful stuff. And as to Brexit, in my nightmares, I see us heading back to the days of my childhood where garlic was an evil foreign substance and olive oil was for putting on burns and was kept in the medicine cabinet.
Wow. Oh, dear. Anyway, fixing my daughter's laptop. Alpha 32 replied, brilliant. Well done, Mr. Morris. I'm constantly breaking things. So this was one was getting bookmarked.
So I said in reply, I hope it never happens to you. Thanks for the comments. One thing I don't think I said was that I ensured the drill bit protruding from the Dremel was far enough to only far enough to get about 2 millimeters from the base of the hole. I had visions of wrecking the laptop if I accidentally drilled into some other component. If I had to do this again, I'd drill as far as I could then. I might try gluing a cocktail stick or thin nail into the hole in the plug with cyanoacrylate CA super glue. I'd use the gel type so it didn't drip all over the place and make the problem worse, though I'm not sure I would actually do that, come to think of it.
That seems a bit dangerous.
Yeah, you'd have to be very, very steady in that.
Jonathan Culp says, I'm in the same boat. The exact same thing happened to my daughter's laptop about 2 months ago. I have still not revived the tiny bit of the headphone jack from the laptop. Our solution was a $10 USB adapter I had lying around for just such occasion when audio goes belly up on one of our computers. She's using that now and seems happy enough. You replied?
I replied to John saying, thanks for the hint, John. My daughter had actually survived perfectly well with the adapter of the sort you recommended to me during the semester. Thanks for alerting me to these devices, by the way. I wanted to fix the audio jack problem because I thought the USB device was mechanically vulnerable since it sticks out a moderate amount. My son destroyed a dual port on his laptop many years ago in an accident involving a large USB stick. So I've always regarded laptop USB ports as fragile.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
Because once you've smashed the structure of the USB port, then it's be very hard pressed to get it repaired, they don't have that many, and you'll have lost important access to your laptop.
Mm. Anyway. Yeah, exactly. And that's a bigger problem than that. But it did take a certain element of bravery in order to do what you did, Dave, though. And especially on your daughter's laptop.
Make sure she was out of the house.
Yeah, exactly. Does she even know you did it?
Oh, yes, she does. Yeah. She was quite pleased with the outcome.
Yes. It's good to know that you took backups beforehand. As I recall, you didn't. But yes, that's also brave.
It's nothing important on that laptop, she says, anyway. So we have one more comment on 2082, which is showed by Nacho Geordie, Basic Audio Production Equalization. And it was from Jonas, who said, new perspective. Thanks for the show. I always tend to change the EQ settings when listening to music, etc. I never really thought about it from the audio engineer's point of view. Specifically, the idea of tuning different frequencies out of a recording to change the feel of the recording. Seems like what noise-cancelling headphones do, more manual and precise. EQ after the recording is done feels kind of blunt and pointless after hearing what it's really for. I guess that's why they have all those sliders when you see studios on TV and movies. I have much more respect for audio production engineers now. Maybe on your next show you could talk about the different ways you could record in a noisy multi-person room as compared to a smaller room with just one or two people.
Good idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I like the inherent request for shows.
Yes, yes. The whole audio thing is not as obvious as you might think, is it? There's a lot of magic in there, and you need to understand stuff that is not intuitively obvious, I find, anyway.
Absolutely.
When I was recording that thing about GNU Health, I took a mic, a recording device, a Zoom, and I stood it in the middle of a round table, and the three of us sat round the table. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would give us and I set it in a mode where it did a sort of round cardioid shape type pickup. But the result was I was very clear, but my interviewees, Tom and Ewan, were not anywhere near as clear. Ewan is a bit clearer than Tom. He's got a slightly louder voice, I suspect. And I'd spoken to an engineer after that, a friend who does quite a lot of audio work, and he said, "Oh, no, that's not the way you do it at all." And I'd set it in the wrong mode, apparently. So who would have known? Well, not me, obviously.
Yeah, I've had that with the Zoom here at interviews. So I just tend to have a front-facing, very narrow. With these Zooms, you have, just for people who don't have them, there's several different modes that you can set them up where it's at the back microphones is two pointing to the back and they've got a 120 degree angle, and then there's a front one that's 90 degrees. So when I'm doing interviews at Fostem, I set the front one to 90 degrees and then point it directly at the person's face, so you pick up very little background noise for, you know, given the people that are there.
Yeah, I think
so. You need to know your case, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah. You need to understand what settings you should have for different environments.
Did you plug in when you were recording that interview? Did you plug in headphones into the Zoom to hear the output?
No, I didn't.
You should always do that.
Should have done that.
Yeah,
should have done that.
Well, not that your audio was fine.
I had to go through it and boost. Other two, well, everything they said got boosted manually, so it was a very long process. But three microphones would have been better, of course. But
you make do with what you have. It's HPR, not the BBC.
Yep.
On the August 2016 archive mailing list, we had a notification of a new podcast, the randompodcast.info, with links to the website, MP3 and OGG feed, as well as the email address. And X1101, who was Lyle, replied. Eventually we found out what his name was, Dave. The mystery of...
It's good to know, yes.
Yeah, it's good to know. Thanking us for that. So please have a listen to that. It's a really good show. And Kevin asked for mono to stereo thing. And I don't know why he just doesn't do that himself in post-processing. You know, I don't necessarily agree with stereo podcasts for audio anyway. I don't think it adds a lot. But because I sometimes need to listen in with one ear, I always switch everything to mono. In my post-processing of downloaded stuff.
Yeah. I use Audacity to convert everything to mono before. It makes it easier to edit too, doesn't it? But it's pretty straightforward thing to do.
As well as truncate silence. And I've already done a show on my audio workflow. You sent in an email about the end of Gmail mailing list.
Yes. I don't think the situation has improved. I must admit, I've not followed it up much, though I've seen people pointing to the fact that Gmail is closing down on social media. So I don't think it's improved particularly. But I think
quite a lot of comments on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, sad to see them go if they do. And
absolutely,
thank you very much for the excellent work that they've done. In the past, I always think news as a protocol has an awful lot to offer that people are not looking at. It's just a thing.
Yeah, it's very much gone out of favor now, hasn't it, seemingly? Although a lot of people read their mail through Usenet news on Gmail, which is something that surprised me when I was reading about it, to be honest. But I can understand why you'd want to do that.
Yeah. And then we had the inevitable call for shows that goes out every few months, which makes me sad. But there you go. So, people, please submit shows. Thank you very much. Don't be trying to do a masterpiece. It's a podcast. Just record it, send it in. Doesn't matter how long it is. Doesn't matter what the topic's about, so long as it's of interest to hackers, and it will be. Yep. Do that. Thank you. Bye.
Yep. Hopefully we'll. We did get a response from that, which was quite good. But then things quieten down again, and it's going to have to be another plea in a couple of weeks.
Unfortunately, the response was mostly from the old regular show hosts, which is a bit concerning. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There weren't one or two.
Tony is now the old regular, I guess. But Mr. X, Norris Beasy, Windigo, Dave, the Love Bug, John Culp. You know, again, it's the same old people coming up with the shows. So guys,
come.
Okay, Dave, anything else to add to this very depressing end to today's show?
I was just searching for something positive to say, but I couldn't find it. So nothing, I'm afraid. No. There's more shows.
We need more shows. It's not that there aren't people who want to make shows. It's just that getting people to realize, guys, record them, send them in. It's quite simple. Yeah. Either that or you're going to be listening to 6 months of shows that I produce, which I don't particularly think would be that interesting for people. So record them, send them in. It's as simple as that. One show a year, that's all we need. Alrighty. Any other news, Dave?
I don't think so. I've done one or two small tweaks to things.
Oh, yeah, tell us about that.
I found that the way in which episodes are displayed on the HPR site meant that the things that let you jump from show to show, say first, previous, next, latest, the one at the top of the page was inserting leading zeros in a number less than four digits, whereas the bottom one wasn't. And I only discovered this because I was working in the range 900 to 999 while I was uploading some of them to archive.org, and I was finding, hang on, where have I got to now? Why is the zero dropped off the front? Because you need the zero one for the comment system to work, and which is another thing, of course. So I corrected the PHP. That's basically all it was. So, and that's now in place, and it seems to be working fine.
And I need to put in on the front page that more next thing for five pages, for the next five, previous five, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. That would be nice.
Give myself more work, Dave. Don't want that.
I was actually thinking of putting a first, previous, next, well, maybe not first and last, but previous and next on the archive.org versions, actually. Yeah, that would be quite nice.
By the way, you must say the archive.org ones are looking very good. It's really professional now over there.
Yes, it's down to the archive.org guys, of course, there. But I'm formatting the HTML to look nice within their framework, so
yeah,
that seems to be working.
Bit of a black art from what I understand, but
yeah, I've got a potential show about the subject, but it's it's very technical, so I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, please do.
When?
It. I know a lot of other podcasters are struggling with archive.org uploads. So yeah, anything that you could do to help that out. Our goal here is to spread the joy of podcasting, don't you know?
Well, that's certainly on the list and is looming. So I'll get to it before too long, I think.
And I fixed one of your bugs, Dave, from the CC clock episode. I let the domains expire in my cleaning up domains, and I put them on my own website, and then that was a whole saga, just having to edit out URLs and stuff. So there you go. And then the next one, I went to the next one on my list and then got distracted by having to tidy this house, which I'm still not finished. so much for my week off.
Yes. This is the way of the world, I'm afraid. Yeah. Incidentally, I don't know if it's worth mentioning about archive.org that we're looking at the moment. We don't necessarily upload all of the other components of shows to archive.org. So if you've got pictures which you have sent to HBR and they're on the website, they're not being uploaded to the Internet Archive. We're simply pointing back to the HBR site. Really, the file should be on the archive. So that's a future development of the software.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I'm going to
archiving
be working
is
on.
Such a fascinating problem, really, isn't it?
It is. It's once you get your teeth into this sort of stuff, you really want to, you know, keep on and make it better. I find anyway. I can understand people becoming quite obsessed by it. So just control myself. But you know, you're trying to do a thing for the world at large. That's the way I feel about it, anyway.
Yeah.
So it's an important thing.
Good work, Jeff. Good work. All righty, folks, you heard the show. This is it, Community News, HBR. So if you actually want to join this show and not be as depressed as I am, the reason I'm so depressed is we found out our house that we renovated 14 years ago has got a roof that needs replacing. Thank you very much, Dodgy Builders, or us. And that's going to set us back a wedge of cash. So no trips to Fostem or anything else for me for the next coming time. Thank you very much, builders who have gone bankrupt since then. So yeah, no recourse.
Really stinks. I'm very sorry for you.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, I mean, it is what it is. We had the money put aside for your renovating the bathroom, but that's going to have to wait for another few years and then blah. So anyway, you know, there's worse. We could be on a frickin' boat on the Mediterranean trying to get to a better life. Yeah, so first world problems, really. Okay, Dave.
Okay.
Join us now and share the software.
Join us now and share the software. You'll be free.
That's quite ecclesiastical. That's
hackers, you'll be free.
Oh, yes, Dave. Remember, don't delete the show until it's posted. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.